ربنا ربنا
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to the French Connections Tuesday edition. Today's date, the 28th day of April, 2009. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to be back with you for this most important of broadcasts. We have a great, powerful truth teller coming on after the first break, but before we get into his information, his name is Adrian Salbucci, and he is from Argentina. An incredible researcher, remarkable information he's going to share about financial implosion of Argentina over the last 25 years and what happened to his country, and it's an incredible story. But he knows the names. He's going to name the names tonight. We're going to do that with you. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk to everybody about this flu they've got going around the world. First of all, it's not a natural flu. It was laboratory invented and being propagated by all the usual suspects. Its virulence is only killing people in Mexico, but ladies and gentlemen, you got to understand, you know, Mexico has tens of thousands of people dying every day throughout the nation from malnutrition and typhus and tuberculosis, and I mean it's a third world country in the large cities. Of course, in rural Mexico and some of the richer communities like Acapulco, of course, it's very nice. The poverty reigns. And so this is to hype up the control system in the United States. It does not mean that they don't have very virulent forms of this so-called swine flu ready to go out and make people ill. One way you will definitely get sick is if you take the vaccine. So you do not, under any circumstances, if you hear my voice and you trust anything I've ever told you, you do not, for any reason, accept any vaccine into your body. You are to give an emphatic no to anyone telling you that a vaccine is going to save you from this flu. So, what is it you can do to save yourself? Well, a lot of information about a group of substances, all of them are natural to the human body. One is called vitamin D. It is not a vitamin, but they call it vitamin D, sadly. It's not very accurate in the description of what it is. But vitamin D is what we receive in our skin from the sun. And it has a natural antiseptic and natural antiviral and natural antibacterial property to it that modulates our immune systems and helps us to stay healthy. Now, anybody who has taken supplements of this will not get a flu. They just won't get it. If you take vitamin D supplements, which you can get at your pharmacist or you can buy from some health food stores, have some forms of vitamin D. And on top of that, eating good foods, well-balanced diet, no microwave food to destroy the vitamin content, preferably some foods that come from your garden. And you have some other things, especially in the Indian diet, you've got what's called turmeric or turmeric. Very, very powerful anti-inflammatory, which with infections such as flu, you get an inflammation. So another very powerful way of reducing inflammation. And what the other thing is that most of these people who die from these powerful flus, such as the so-called Spanish flu and these others, these were engineered diseases. They get a cytokine rush on their immune system, where the immune system overreacts to the illness, and their lungs swell and burst from their own immune system's reaction to the pathogen or to this man-made sickness they give. So this is why it's important that vitamin D be brought in, because it actually modulates the swelling and the inflammation, and so does the use of turmeric, and also the use of cinnamon also stops the setting up process of this. Now, what the science is behind this? I'm not a scientist. I'm a financial specialist and a researcher on financial and geopolitical things. But I've done my research with people who do know, and basically, ladies and gentlemen, you can beat this stuff. It will be going around the globe. How much of it is going to make it to the African continent? I'm guessing probably a great deal of it. This is their way of trying to get rid of population, it seems, in my view. And so you should be well aware of it. Just keep an eye on it in your news. Do not trust people who tell you you need the vaccine. End of story. On the other fronts here, many, many, many more new financial debacles are erupting. Unemployment rates are skyrocketing up. In fact, the largest single rise in unemployment in a single month in France this past month. Never before seen a statistical change in unemployment for the negative as they did in this last month. So this crisis of financial implosion, all also designed by these people, is continuing. Now, what we're going to talk to Adrian Sarbucci about is the fact that this is an engineered crime against us all with the intent of consolidating their power globally. That means to get rid of borders. That means there will be a single currency worldwide. There'll be a single governing body that controls it. We're going to talk a little bit about how the IMF comes in and forces your country to become subservient to the global financial masters. Many of you are Africans and Kenyans and Somalis and all of the different countries, Tanzanians and Mozambique. You'll all remember visits from the IMF to your country and the terrible results that followed. But you'll also note that the same global bodies like the WHO, the World Health Organization, working through the United Nations, has also been trying to slip sterilization products in their vaccines. They've also been putting viruses that are actually live and killing people, weakening immune systems. So all of it sounds very conspiratorial, but let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, when the research has been done and you see the stuff, they're out there trying to get us, and that is a fact. So what we have to do here is look at the reality of our situation and act accordingly. The show I did last week with Mohammed Rafiq brought to the fore the idea that we need to come together as human beings that love freedom and that love our neighbors and that want a wonderful future for our children's, and to begin to work together from the different communities. Any community where someone is willing to work in a righteous manner should be gladly welcomed into the fight. And I am what I consider a uniter of people from disparate groups. You know, many of us come to this fight from different paths. However, if we have a goodness inside ourselves, we know that our families, we want the best for our children, we want the best for our wives, we want the best for our lives. And there is no substitute, first of all, for freedom. Freedom to choose your friendships, freedom to choose the way you are to go ahead with your career decisions and with your food eating choices. And it's the different things that you do in life. You want to be able to say, I can have a little bit of a unique take on this world as long as I am mindful of the morality involved in my decisions. But you see, the people involved at the leadership level of this world are not moral. They're psychopaths, sociopaths. They have no empathy or sympathy for others, and they take, as parasites would from a host until that host dies. And then they jump to another host and suck that host dry. As they are leaving America now as a sinking ship, they are now moving into China and India to set up their next regimes and to build their next money-making scheme for the next stage. But the next stage includes a worldwide government. They have had this in the planning. PNAC documents talk about it. Henry Kissinger's white papers back in the 70s discussed it. They also discussed inventing AIDS and then inflicting it upon large populations in Africa for population reduction, as they were successful in doing. So much of what I'm talking about has been an ongoing process, and one of the countries that we're going to talk about tonight, Argentina. If you don't know much about Argentina, and I'm going to have Adrian, my guest, speak a little bit about his nation, but it is naturally a wealthy country, full of of natural wealth as South Africa is, with pampas that is beautiful for growing animals and growing fruits and vegetables and grains. It also has mineral wealth. It has a wonderfully well-educated population. And in fact, in the last 40 years, it was one of the wealthiest nations in the world. They fell victim to underhanded dealings with the Israeli-run American government and the financial criminals that held sway in our world through IMF and others, and have been victimized three separate times with hyperinflation and financial problems that were foisted upon this nation criminally. So what we're going to talk about is who did it, how they did it, why they did it, and the results of what they've done in Argentina. And then we're going to talk about the geopolitical implications globally and who's doing this globally. Now, Adrian is a impeccable researcher. His attention to detail is second to none. And he deserves your full attention as we discuss these situations, because you are going to get an education on how this system works globally, like no other that we've presented here on the French Connection, because, you know, primarily the French Connection is telling the full story, both historically, all the way back a couple of hundred, 300 years, all the way to the present day. But what this gentleman is going to bring is another layer of full information, so that you can feel secure when you make the claims that we make here on the French Connection to other people. The facts are the facts, as you will find. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take our break for this first visit with our sponsors, and when we return, we will be bringing up Adrian Sabucci for his first segment.
The French Connection with Daryl Bradford Smith.
We are back, we are back, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you here for this most important broadcast. Of course, Daryl Bradford Smith. IamTheWitness.com is my website. You can go there for the background, for the historical referencing, for the audio files that discuss the financial mess we're in. Going back years now, we've nailed the culprits, we've nailed the scam, both through the derivative process, the housing crash, the real estate bubble, the commercial real estate failings, the IMF's shenanigans, all of it, the bailouts, all of this stuff has been well covered and explained. So if you want those informations, you go to the archives at IamTheWitness.com, and it will bring you up to date to all of the information we share. My guest, as I have told you in the warm up to this introduction here, Adrian Sabucci is a remarkable guy. First of all, he is a native of South America, Argentina specifically, but speaks wonderfully clear English. He was educated both in Britain at some time, in the United States he spent time, as well as in his home country. So I'm going to bring him up right now. Adrian, are you with me?
Hello, how are you, Daryl? Nice to say hello.
Wonderful to have you on my program here. We have so much to cover tonight, Adrian. It is going to be an eye-opener for many people, I believe. First of all, I want to get involved in having you explain a little bit about your growing up in a country that was repeatedly having problems financially, and talk a little bit about what you saw happening and what you believed was going on at the time and what you now know was taking place in fact, so people have a good idea of some of the things you've experienced in your time living in Argentina.
Well, first of all, Daryl, Argentina is a bit of a contradiction, because just so the audience will have an idea what we're talking about, Argentina is has a territory seven times larger than that of France, and it has half the population of France. There's about 80 million French population. We have about 39 million people.
No, actually, we've got 60 million here, so you're thinking Germany's population, but yes, we...
Okay, right. But anyway, you know, we are small. We have a smaller population than France, which is six or seven times larger in its territory. Our territory is extremely rich. We have just about everything you can think of: minerals, energy, foodstuff, cows, everything you can possibly want, potable water, and so forth. So you would expect a country which has such vast resources, such potential wealth, and such a small population that we should all live very well. And yet, half of our population is below the poverty level. So something somewhere is wrong. Something is really rotten, and not exactly in Denmark, but in Argentina.
Mm.
And when I go to what you were just saying, you know, the things that I have been able to live through my life, I'm 56, and I've been able to live quite a number of things that enable you to draw some conclusions, which our friends in the United States and even in Europe are having a bit of a more difficult time drawing those conclusions. And it's because we realize that these periodic financial and banking and economic collapses that we have suffered in Argentina, they have a period which is of about 12 to 17 years. So that, in a way, as time goes on, many of us have come to realize that this is not just a series of mistakes or a series of accidents. This is really a model. And the difference between an accident and a model is that a model has its constituent parts, it has its internal logic, it has its consistency. So you start realizing that the model has stages, and you realize at what stage you are. So that being said, we had three collapses of a different nature in each case, but they all have certain analogies amongst them. In 1975, then in 1989, where we had one of the worst hyperinflations in the history of mankind, and then in 2001 and 2002, when our entire banking system just collapsed. So what am I trying to say by this? We've experienced these collapses, so we sort of feel them coming, we can smell them coming, we can tell when the wind is changing. Whilst in America, and even in Europe, when you talk to Americans about the Great Depression from the 30s, well, for them, it's just a black and white photograph that they've seen in their history books and on TV,
yes,
of people queuing up to have, a dish of free soup or whatever, a hot meal, or something that their grandfather might have told them many years back that they would remember something in the 30s, whilst we have actually lived through it. So it makes a big difference when you realize that you actually lived through something. And to sort of summarize it, the basic problem here is that there has been a perverse manipulation of our currency, of our banking system, and of the way we have financed the needs of our countries that has systematically placed us under the total domination of the international bankers and their local agents in Argentina. And instead of being a powerful, proud, and very wealthy country, we are today a very much pauperized, even poor country, which is rather ridiculous, like somebody who is having hunger or suffering hunger when he's living in a palace.
Well, now at the same time, there was a goal in some of these implosions where the assets of the country that might have been in the hands of the federal government of Argentina or in the hands of indigenous peoples or in the hands of wealthy ranchers or whatever were imploded and then bought at peso, at small numbers on the dollar, at pennies on the dollar, if you will. And it seems like a standard modus operandi of the manipulators to bring about great expansion in the money supply, great wealth, great lending, and then shutting the tap off, forcing an implosion, and then sweeping up those assets for next to nothing. And until now, the country is virtually held by a small number of internationalists that we're going to identify in a little while. Is that fair to say about what they did there?
Oh, absolutely, because for those of your audience who probably are not very familiar with the recent history of Argentina, in 1976 we had one of our most unfortunate coup d'etats. In other words, a regime made up of a small group of liberal military officers and civilian economists took over power in March of 1976, and the excuse was to fight against communist guerrillas, which was rather true at the time because we were under the attack of communist guerrillas, but that fight only lasted about a couple of years. What is really very bad and is always the falsified part of our history is that the civilians who took over the Ministry of Economy, what they did starting in 1976 was starting to take unnecessary, totally unnecessary, dollar-denominated loans from the likes of the Citicorp, J.P. Morgan, at that time Manufacturers Hanover Trust, and naturally the IMF and the World Bank. As Argentina started with building up a totally unnecessary debt, it just grew and grew exponentially. When in 1983 we again had civilian governments and the military left, the foreign debt kept growing. It was just refinanced. It was a compound interest. It just kept getting worse. And in 1992-93, a very, very perverse president by the name of Carlos Menem.
Yes.
And his economy minister, Trilateral Commission member Domingo Cavallo, they started privatizing all the potentially very wealthy, albeit inefficient, but potentially very wealthy state companies in the energy sector, the steel mills, the railways, the airline, just about everything that was in the hands of the state. It was sold off at rock bottom prices. To give you an idea, YPF, which used to be our state-owned oil company, we have a lot of oil in this country, was sold at about 4% of its true potential value. And the excuse was, okay, we'll sell off all these state companies and we'll get rid of the foreign debt. But it didn't work that way because you had all the speculation going on and the foreign debt just kept growing and growing and growing. And it got so bad that in 2001 and 2002, it was totally impossible to continue paying it, and that was the reason, the main reason for our third and last major collapse over the past years. So what is the end result? We have a huge, unpayable foreign debt, and yet we've lost control over all of our state companies, which are now in the private hands, not of Argentinian interests, but in the private hands of international oil companies, international electricity companies, foreign banks of all shapes and sizes. And if anything, the country has lost practically all control over its vital strategic assets.
Well, now, that same event took place here in France through the 90s as well, when companies that had long earlier had been in the hands of the public, they were public owned companies, they were sold off. Companies like Alstom, which the French government owns 60% worth, and Thomson Multimedia, Thomson Electronics, and their train manufacturing, and all the different companies, the electric company, the phone company, France Telecom, one of the largest companies on earth today, private now. We're all in the hands of the public. They sold them off, as you just described, at pennies on the dollar. And I was living in France when they were describing to the public what a good benefit this was going to be for the public purse, and how more efficiently run these enterprises were going to be. Well, what we've got today is higher debt than we've ever had. Those companies are no longer part of the crown jewels of the country, if you will. And we've got deficit spending reaching astronomical levels in this country, to the point where services are being cut, health care is being threatened, social systems are being destroyed. And we have no assets to fall back on, so we are not that far behind where you have already been. You've been there already. We're right behind you, heading down that terrible hole in the ground. So this seems to be a system that they've employed over and over and over again. You want to discuss a little bit about what you know about who they are and how they did it?
Well, yes, absolutely. In actual fact, as it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning, it's a model that's applied with slight variations in just about every country. So the way they sell you their idea is always the same. Oh, my dear, you have very inefficient public utility companies. Let's privatize them, and then they're going to be very efficient. So, for example, our trains, our railway system, they used to say it's really very inefficient, and it costs the government $1 million a day to keep it running. So that was the excuse to privatize it. Now it's in private hands. It's worse than before, and it gets a government subsidy of $2 million a day.
Well, here's the interesting thing, Adrian. Adrian, this is interesting because I know, as a fact, here in France and in Britain, also, some of the people in government were very, very cozy with the same interests that buy these assets up, chiefly Rothschild and Co., Oppenheimer and the rest. And these individuals have people that work for their banks, and then 3, 4 years, 5 years later, you see them in government. You can name a man like Mendelssohn in Britain who has roots back to the very top of the Rothschild structure. But it's the same here in France, where essentially they're acting as government representatives, but they're not acting in the interests of the public. And rather than put money into the British train system, what they did is they starved that system into inefficiency. And then they use the starvation of the train system to say, look how badly run it is.
Well, I think that the point that we have to is that I think we can, a first conclusion we can take is that a company is not efficient or inefficient because it's either state-owned or private-owned. It's efficient or inefficient based on the people and the business model that it is following. So you can have a very efficient public company, or you can have an extremely inefficient private company like General Motors and Ford, for example.
That's right.
Or Chrysler out there on the verge of collapse.
That's right.
So in a way, it is sort of a children's story that people seem to believe time and again. Now, I can give you a very good example of what you were just saying. Starting in 1976, when Argentina's foreign debt was built up totally artificially, we had the Minister of Economy, a guy by the name of Martínez Ríos, and his Secretary of Finance, a guy by the name of Guillermo Walter Klein. Now, this guy, Guillermo Walter Klein, whilst he was the finance secretary, he was also the key lawyer representing the foreign banks that were stuffing in us with unnecessary loans. So he would go to his office in the evening and send telexes off at that time in the 70s to the banks asking for loans, and then in the morning he would go to his office in the Secretariat for Finance and he would actually be requesting them. So you had literally the same guy on both sides of the counter, which obviously is a conflict of interest, but that's the way the foreign debt was built up. And another key person, because very often when you take, Daryl, this to understand how the world works, you have to understand that it is a very vast and complex network of interest, which has specific organizations like planning organizations like the Trilateral Commission or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Royal Institute of International Affairs. It has informal, cozy clubs like the Bilderbergs, and then it has various people who will actually activate different parts of that network. Some of them are very well known, like your Henry Kissingers and your Rockefellers and your Rothschilds, and some are less well known, as the examples I'm giving you about Argentina. But there is one specific case, a guy by the name of Domingo Cavallo. He's a Rockefeller protege, and he was first the foreign minister of Argentina in 1989 and 1990, and he was responsible for Argentina signing not a peace treaty, but a total unconditional surrender treaty with Britain, because you'll probably remember that in 1982 we had a war with Britain over the Malvinas Islands in the South Atlantic.
Yes.
So the first thing, when he came in power, he was called to go as foreign minister to sign this surrender treaty with Britain, and that included allowing all these massive international investments into the country to purchase up all the companies. When he had done that, President Menem moved him over to the economy ministry, so he started managing the actual sell-off of all these companies. As the years went by and the whole thing was on the verge of collapse because of his own doing, in March 2001, he came back as economy minister with another president, and to ensure that he was named, David Rockefeller from from J.P. Morgan Chase, and William Rhodes from Citicorp and the American Society, both of them are CFR, both of them are Trilateral Commission, they came physically to Buenos Aires to tell then-President Fernando de la Rúa, you have to name Domingo Cavallo as the economy minister, which naturally Mr. de la Rúa did, and 9 months later we were led straight head-on into the worst financial and banking collapse in our history.
Well, you know, there's a similar thing that happened here in France. See, this is how parallel this conspiracy works. Jacques Chirac brought a man he said he didn't like into his government, and then proceeded to give him positions throughout the government. First, he was the interior minister, which he rejigged the entire police structure and started putting in captains and commanders of these police departments that were sympathetic to his demands. He was the economy minister for about 6 or 8 months, where he re-engineered the structure of that. He was the head of he went from department to department under the control of Chirac, giving him these jobs. And then when it was time for all that to get done, then they shoot him in as president. Now he's in charge of a system he built. But he built it on the urges. Now here's the interesting thing. His recent vacation he took over to the United States to visit George Bush when Bush was still president. He stayed in a $60 million house in New Hampshire. Well, the house was owned by none other than Mr. Rothschild. And the house was provided to Mr. Sarkozy free of charge. And, of course, in a recent trip for his vacation, he was on the Mediterranean on a 40 or 50 meter yacht that he was given by a man named Bolare, who was put into business by the same forces of Rothschild. So my point to you is this. You know exactly from whence this man came, and when you know about the Sarkozy family history coming from Salonika, Greece, and you know about the caliphate's implosion and his father's participation with Ataturk and the rest, you start seeing a larger conspiracy. And it's interesting that the organizations you mentioned, Adrian, they have a lot of members, but not all those members are involved in decision making. They're kind of like they're kind of there as window dressing. You know, but there's a private group within that group that answers to, you know, there's maybe 10 or 15 within the Consul on Foreign Relations that really has any clout. And they actually answer to a higher group. So we're going to talk about that in a minute when we come back from our little break here. We have a break for our sponsors. So ladies and gentlemen, hang on. This is a powerful story you all need to hear.
Connection with Daryl Bradford-Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are back with my guest, Adrian Salvucci, and he is a researcher and a truth teller from South America, Argentina more specifically. And I want to go right back to him on what we were discussing. You know, I want to bring up something real quick here, Adrian, about the surrounding countries, Uruguay, Paraguay, even Brazil, Chile. We know that Salvador Allende and the different governments were imploded, and there were problems financially where the IMF stepped in. But you'll also see that with Bolivia and Ecuador. And in other words, this is a model they've used throughout South America repeatedly. And I remember in the 1960s and 70s, they were pouring money into Brazil for projects that never yielded the kind of returns they were promised, and saddled Brazil with huge debts, and left that country struggling to lift its poor out of poverty. So, in other words, we've got a repeated model both in your continent, in Europe now, it's all taking shape the same way, and in South Africa the same way. My point is that there is a plan here. There is a group at the top here, and they keep showing themselves. And I have identified them through their deeds as Zionists. Now, because at the very top of the decision-making process, what we find is a group of well-connected individuals from the Jewish community. And I have to say, in advance of this, I do not believe all Jews are involved. So this is not an issue of Jews being bad, and I don't believe they are. But Zionist Jews who follow this idea that Israel and the whole Ashkenazi Zoharite following that has developed around this group over the years are in fact working against mankind to build a government structure that they control. And I have the evidence to prove it, as I think you do. Could you tell me a little bit about what you've connected to that conspiracy, either in countries near yours or your own?
Well, let me just very quickly mention a couple of things. First of all, as you were correctly saying, there is definitely a pattern in the way things are triggered in this part of the world, in South America and Central America. It is no coincidence that during the Cold War years, when it was the USSR versus the USA, so to speak, that we had systematic military regimes taking over and nobody said anything. And when the time had come for the USSR to become history and the stage was set for globalization, all our countries had to go into, quote, democracy, unquote, which is basically democracy based on money, so that we all have, Argentina included, the best democracy that money can buy.
And are you familiar with Kyklos cycles that the Greeks talked about, where democracies almost automatically over time will turn into tyranny because a republic... yeah, go ahead.
In Plato's Republic, when he describes the way social regimes start to erode and to become decadent, he cites democracy as the previous stage to tyranny, just about the very bottom of the jar, and after that it can only get much, much worse.
That's right.
I think this is something that they've known for 2,500 years.
That's
and
right.
We still have to learn our lesson,
yes.
So to speak. Now, regarding what you were just saying, I think it is very, and this is something that we have studied very closely here in Argentina, because Argentina has the third largest Jewish community in the world after Israel and the United States. They don't give you, if you go into any Israeli or Jewish website, they will not give you the right figures, because they played them down. Otherwise, the Holocaust math will not close. But that's another issue altogether. Now, the thing that we have to keep in mind is that there are basically four categories that I think is very important to differentiate them, because the media try or various interests try to put them all together. First, there is the Jewish community, the Jewish peoples, which, as far as Argentina is concerned, are a very peaceful people. They blend in rather nicely. We have no problems with them. They have no problems with us. Second, you have the Jewish religion, which is about as non-intrusive a religion as you can possibly imagine. I mean, Jews never try to convert anybody into Judaism. So, if anything, the Jewish religion can not really bother anybody, at least not in this country. And they are two millenarian, they've been around for thousands of years, both the religion and the peoples of the Jewish people. Now, then you have Zionism, which is a 19th century ideology founded, amongst others, by Theodor Herzl, a Viennese lawyer. And in his watershed writing, his book, The Jewish State, there's a chapter where he says that the state of Israel, the future state of Israel, this is 1896 that he wrote it, should be either in Palestine or in Argentina. So you can imagine how concerned we are over the fact that Zionism, from its very roots, had Argentina in mind as a part of the world to cede, to give them a part of our territory so that they can found the Jewish state. And I think that plan is still in force, and they're trying to found a second Jewish state, which could be in Patagonia, in southern Argentina and southern Chile. And then you have the State of Israel, which is an entity that was formed in 1948. They're about to be 61 years old next year, and they're as good or as bad as any other nation. Now, I think it's very important to understand, as far as Zionism is concerned, that not all Jews are Zionists. I know many of them who are not. Norman Finkelstein, Noam Chomsky.
I got to say, Chomsky's I don't trust the guy as far as I could throw him. I want you to know that right off the bat.
I'm not saying that I trust him, but he officially, he says he is not a Zionist. I don't know whether that's good or bad. I mean, he does not identify with the Zionist ideal.
Mm.
And then you have many Gentiles who are themselves maybe Christian or whatever, and yet they are Zionists. There is a television interview dated 7th April 2007. I can give anybody who's curious the link on internet, where Vice President Joe Biden said in Shalom TV, literally, "You don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. I'm a Zionist," and he is formerly a Catholic. So you have the Vice President of the United States formally saying that he is a Zionist, even though he is not Jewish. And the Bush regime, practically the entire Bush regime were Zionists, and yet Dick Cheney, George Bush, Condoleezza Rice were not Jews.
Well, you know, now wait a minute. Before we go any further, Adrian, I want to talk a little bit about crypto-Jews, and I want to talk about people whose families are actually practicing Jews in the quiet, but on the surface will claim other religions, and we know from the implosion of the caliphate that the Sabbateans and the rest claimed that they had converted. You also know about the Muranos, who actually hold sway in northern Central America and into South America, where you have a great influence of Murano Jews controlling governments. And I think Menem and the rest were very closely connected to that group. My point being is that, you know, they can claim to be Catholics, but you've got the Archbishop of Paris, who is Jewish. You've got the last Pope from Wysea there, from Poland, who is Jewish, and you can go on and on. My point being is that what they say and who they are is not always doesn't always square up.
That's quite true. That's quite true. For example, in the case of Monsignor Lustiger, the Archbishop of Paris, at least he had expressed that very openly. But in cases, for example, like Carlos Menem, the former president of Argentina, even the present president, the Kirchners, there's a lot of doubt about what their real roots are.